Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, oh my goodness, it's just a darn near a shootout. We've got David Bialik and Charles Kinney and me talking about what's wrong with AM radio, its demise, the recent activities, and its future. Pretty interesting, especially the tips at the end when Charles and David both have some interesting things to say. It's all coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. And the fellow who gave me that light bulb is on the show today. Can you believe that? It's a show about AM radio. And I know that may sound boring to a lot of folks. It may be a topic with a lot of passion involved or opinions, and you're going to hear them today. We're going to get a little passionate and talk about some opinions. I've got a couple of wonderful guests with me here, chosen just for your pleasure, excitement, and information. Let's bring them in here. We have David Bialik and Charles Kinney. David, welcome in. Good to see you, sir. How are you?
Hello, Kirk. How are you?
I'm good. Where are you talking to us from?
I'm talking to you from my home. We kindly call this office the West Wing.
All right.
As I tell my wife, she's in charge of everything that goes on in the house with shopping and what food we eat and everything. And I sit in the West Wing and decide if we go to war or not.
Cool. And David, what's your title these days? Are you consulting somewhere? What's happening in your life professionally these days?
I am currently consulting, unless a better offer comes by, and I am not only consulting, I am still chairing the Metadata and Streaming Working Group for the NRSC. I am chairing the Technical Committee for the Audio Engineering Society on Broadcast and Online Delivery. So those things sort of keep me off the streets.
Okay. All right. Well, I know the good things will happen when David's on the committee with NRSC and AES. We'll hear a little bit more about that if we get done arguing about AM radio by the end of the show. Also with us is Charles Kinney from Atlanta, Georgia. Charles, welcome in. Man, it's good to see you.
Hey there. Happy to be here. Thank you.
What are you doing these days?
So everything. I'm in charge of the Cox radio stations in Atlanta and Athens, most notably WSB, the 50 kilowatt powerhouse out of Atlanta. So very happy to be here and discuss the future and the past of AM.
Now, David does a little bit of social media posting, and I know that David's involved typically with organizations and standard setting because David understands that very, very well. David, some years ago, you and I, we were seeing a lot of each other at AES conventions, but also you had been highly involved with streaming audio. Would you give us just a little elevator speech about your experience with streaming audio and why that's been a big part of your career in the last few years?
Okay. I was director of streaming operations for both CBS Radio and later on Entercom. And before that, I was doing streaming as a consultant for a number of stations. So I think I've set up maybe around 1,300 to 2,000 streams around the world. And I truly love streaming and do feel that it can be better, and it will eventually be appreciated.
Well, I know that you were in part responsible for motivating my colleagues at TELUS Alliance to do a box that is probably the most professional streaming box out there. It does multiple programs. It can do lots and lots of streams going out, in different formats and so forth. And it's got metadata capabilities that are pretty sophisticated. What's that box about?
Okay. At an Audio Engineering Society convention in San Francisco, I had, right before that, I had convinced my bosses at CBS, I said, what we're doing really is stupid. And I said, I'd really like to design a box that's designed for broadcast stations, because I'm tired of having to fix computers that were in charge of streaming. And what those normally were the secretary's old computers that somehow the engineer got a hold of, and that's what they were using. And they were putting in very expensive audio cards in computers that were dying. And in the middle of morning drive, you'd hear, oh, the stream's down. Oh, that's because there's dust in the fan because we never cleaned it out beforehand or anything. I said, why don't we treat this like the transmitter? And I think Frank was there. I think Marty Sachs was there. At the time, Tim Carroll was working with you guys. And I forget who else. I think you were in the room, too. And at the back of the AES room, on napkins, we sat there and said, this is what I want. Can we do it? And you guys are like sitting there with napkins trying to design it. And so it started a year-long product. And then we rolled it out to all the CBS stations. The stream sounded great. The company was finally making money on stream, so they sold the company to Entercom. And we had to do it again. But it was really a great product, and that's the Telus R2.
Cool. Well, thanks for that background, and thanks for being such a big part of streaming's success.
Now, Charles, and please tell your bosses I'm still waiting for my check.
Yeah, well, sorry. Charles Kenny, Charles, you're reasonably active on social media. I kind of keep up with you that way. Charles, it seems like almost every weekend I get a picture with a transmitter with lots of green lights and some happy, happy stuff going on. What keeps you busy these days? You mentioned WSB AM, that you take care of that facility, and what a great facility. We're going to be talking about that. But what else are you doing around Georgia?
So I've got 14 sites that I take care of between Atlanta and Athens, and we're a man down right now. So shameless plug, if anybody's looking and qualified, please talk to me. But yeah, we've got six stations in Athens and five signals in Atlanta, plus, of course, the two studio facilities, and it's auxiliary sites. It's a lot going on. Lots and lots and lots of RF. So.
Well, and apparently one of your towers is without red lights anymore, because I keep pointing to this one in my office. What happened at that site in, what is it, Lula, Georgia?
Lula, Georgia. Beautiful scenic Lula, Georgia, which its claim to fame is it was a railroad stop when passenger trains were a big deal. Hmm. But anyway, the old LED or old incandescent lights had to go away, according to American Tower, and they put up LEDs.
Okay.
And the ROI on that will exceed my lifetime, but they thought it was going to be better. So, okay. By God, it's time to change.
That's awesome. So we're getting ready to talk about, I know we've had a long preamble here, but I want to make sure our audience knows about David Bialik and Charles Kenny, two of my very good friends, and a lot of respect for these guys. And if life was different, I may have ended up working for one of you guys. I would have enjoyed it thoroughly. So just much respect. We're going to be talking about AM radio and its future. And we know there's been a lot of politics involved with that, with the recent thing, the little debacle with Ford saying they were dropping AM radio. Then they're going to put it back in, and then they made an announcement, hey, it's just firmware. So we're all going, what's the big deal about firmware? But I think there's more to it than that. But we're going to talk about it from a technical point of view. Is AM worthwhile as we move forward technically in this world of ours? And there's a lot of things to talk about. So David, Charles, thank you for being here. We're going to talk with you in just a second. I've got to point out right now that our show is brought to you in part by Nautel and the webinars that they do all summer long. It's not every week, it's not every Tuesday, but they are having Transmission Talk Tuesday events. And let's see, I better bring that up. Let's see if I can find my, there it is. All right, let's bring up my Nautel. There we go. Hey, we're all on the screen here with Nautel and Transmission Talk Tuesday. They do this not every Tuesday during the summer, during the fall and winter, typically every Tuesday. But Transmission Talk Tuesday is a discussion forum when they bring Jeff Welton hosts it, and they bring on some guests, some expert guests, to talk about things to do with transmitter sites, which, of course, Nautel is heavily involved since they make transmitters. So it's really great that we have a broadcast equipment manufacturer who is so involved with educating us as broadcast engineers. And so I just think that's as cool as can be. Hey, I want to mention something about Jeff Welton. I got to spend dinner and part of the day last week with Jeff Welton in El Paso, Texas. And Jeff has received multiple awards related to education in our industry. And I'll go ahead and put that full screen there. In this discussion coming up on, let's see, it is June the 20th. June 20th is the next one. So that is, well, coming up this coming Tuesday. If you're watching this this week or on Thursday when it airs, this coming Tuesday, June the 20th, they're going to focus on mentoring and education. So they'd really like to hear, Nautel and Jeff both would love to hear what you think you need in terms of education. Maybe you need mentoring. Maybe you just need some more resources that you can go to find out what you need to do a better job as an engineer, or just kind of be on top of things. Maybe you feel like you're behind the eight ball or behind the curve in learning. Maybe you feel like IT is passing you by, or any of the technologies like HD radio. You know, I've been talking about HD radio for good golly, almost 20 years now, and I'm just about to install my first HD radio. I've set up processing for many of them, but I've never actually installed one. So what do you need to, or what do your protégés need in order to get better? Well, Transmission Talk Tuesday is the best place to air your opinion and find out what other people are thinking. June 20th, go to nautel.com/webinars, click on Transmission Talk Tuesday, and then click on the June 20th thing. It's the Next Gen Talent Education and Mentoring. They got a couple more coming up in July. There's one, Combiners and Filters. A lot of us need to know that. And August 1st, What's Up with EAS? That's all coming up from Nautel. Thanks a lot, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, we're back here with Kirk, David, and Charles. And so let's, I don't have to look very hard to find out or talk about some provocative headlines. And maybe we can spend just a minute kind of setting this up. I don't know. I feel like our AM sites and care about AM, for the most part, for many stations, has been going downhill for a couple of decades now. Hey, when I started in broadcast engineering back in the 1980s, sure, AM was important. It may have been the only site that a broadcaster had was the AM site. And so we put a lot of care into making sure the grass was mowed, making sure the cows weren't going to knock the fence over if it was in the middle of a cow pasture, making sure the guy anchor points were protected from the said cows if that was the situation. Hey, I put on the first AM stereo in the state of Kentucky at WEKY in Richmond, Kentucky. Pete Boyce helped me out with that. Actually, he did the install. Maybe I helped him, or maybe I just watched while he did it. But anyway, we had to provide stereo audio to this AM transmitter site. That just seems to have changed. So many AM sites are in such terrible disrepair. Licenses have been turned in. And even without Tesla and BMW excluding AM radio from some of their cars or all their cars, all their EV cars, and with Ford threatening to and then reversing that decision, at least for now, it just doesn't seem like it bodes well for AM radio. I don't know who wants to go first, but you know, as a general thing, think about the last 20, 30, 40 years. How is AM faring now, and what do you think of transmission facilities as we go forward?
Well, that's a loaded question. There's two different answers to that question.
Yeah, go okay.
Ahead, David. I'm sorry. I mean, the answer to that, you have to go back to the late 60s when stereo came around. As I'm sure you guys are aware, AM stereo was developed before FM stereo. The FCC said no. It was going to give an unfair advantage, and it was going to squash FM. FM got stereo, and it took off. Why they couldn't do that in a parallel world is beyond me, but the FCC waited way too long to implement stereo for AM, and then of course, that debacle, we could spend hours talking about that, but they never mandated a standard. If you go back to the 80s and AM stereo was mandated, this is the system we're going to use, this is going to be mandated in receivers, AM would be in a different world right now. There's no question, at least in my opinion.
Charles, you're exactly right. Not only did the FCC push AM to the side, but the broadcasters did. Yes, AM was dominant, and going into the 70s even, it was dominant. And then the 80s came, and AM was almost, AM was still making money. FMs were finally making money. But guess what? The radio station companies were not teaching the salespeople what AM was. They were only teaching them what FM was. You go into a station now, and I challenge anybody to ask anybody in the sales department, what's the difference between the AM and FM? Which signal will get out farther? A lot of people don't appreciate what AM can do, and that's the problem. So you have people that don't know AM trying to sell it. So therefore, instead of pushing a 50,000 watt clear channel, they'll push a little translator or a repeater that only covers a small neighborhood because that's what they know, because it's FM and hey, it has it's stereo. They don't realize that it could be loud and it can be clear. I mean, Leonard Kahn of Kahn Communications, despite what you might think about the AM stereo war, he proved that AM could sound good. And yes, the Motorola people proved that AM can sound good, but no one wanted to do it. And since they could not decide on a standard, that was the first nail in the coffin. Absolutely.
It really was. And that goes back, you know, maybe I should have a disclaimer here that says the opinions stated are my opinions and don't reflect Telesonia.
That's probably good for all of us. I own a couple of AM stations. Charles works for a big, big one, and David has worked for them, so yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that the FCC and the NAB, to a fair amount, a fair degree rather, has given us what we have today. All they had to do was say, this is what we're going to do. The FCC spent gazillions of dollars on HDTV. This is what we're going to do. Okay, this is the standard. This is what we're going to do. You know, and whether or not AVSB or CFDM was better, there's arguments about that. And now, of course, we're at ATSC3. But the FCC is pushing that along. But with radio, particularly AM, it's just, whatever. And that has destroyed, a viable medium.
Absolutely. There's no industry support whatsoever. And granted, I am a friend of Xperia and so forth. But let's face it, they promote the FM HD radio much more than they promote the AM. There's the two stations in the country right now that are all digital on AM.
Yeah.
And we're never hearing about the listenership on that.
Because there are stations that are also RANs.
Yes, absolutely. And they're all, no one's doing any, I think TOP is doing unique programming, but that's about, what's their call letters in DC, Kirk?
FDR, not Federal News Radio, FNR, something like that. Anyway.
Yeah. And I give them a lot of credit, and they're also taking that signal and putting it onto HD stations for HD channels on their FMs and also on the web. And they're using it as a content distribution point, and that's fine. And what a lot of broadcasters have not realized is, hey, I can have AM, I can have FM, I can have the stream. Let's originate good content. No, they're saying, oh, I'm an AM, I have to do this. And they pigeonhole themselves into a specific arena. I have to do conservative talk, or I have to be, brokered time. And FM, I have to play the 10 songs an hour. That's the same 10 songs that are every hour and so forth. But, no one is saying, hey, let's be content distributors. Let's produce content that is unique. I still say to this day, AM can survive and FM can survive if people produced content that was original and unique. Kirk, you're old enough to remember. Charlie, I don't know you long enough. remember in the 1970s when we used to come home from elementary school and pretend that we finished our homework? What were we doing? We were turning on the radio to listen to CBS Mystery Theater.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Well, because it was unique content for that back then.
Yeah. Well, that was okay. Me at 10 o'clock at night in the bunk bed in Winfield, Kansas, with the 5-tube AM radio, and my parents didn't know that I was staying up that late and listening to the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Right. We were all listening to it, and I said that, you know, the reason we were listening to it was unique. It was radio drama, the same thing they were doing back in the 40s, but it was unique to that generation because that generation hadn't heard it. And it was something that people wanted to listen to. And people would listen to it whether the audio was clear or not.
It seems to me AM in a way has been death by a thousand cuts. And we're going to go into, you know, man-made noise. My goodness, if Chuck Kelly was on our show right now, he would talk to you about his measurements of the AM noise floor, the noise floor. Oh, no, in
I'm
the
about
AM band.
To get on my soapbox at that
point. Oh, okay, good. Well, after the break, we'll do that. In my opinion, NRSC, that standard that we boosted the high end to overcome radios that depleted the high end.
Yes, we encouraged poor radio.
Yes, and then with AMHD radio, you've got some stations that are still doing it, and I've got a couple of happy stories about that just as a listener, but we got other stations like Charles's WSB that had it for a while. Somebody heard it of great importance who didn't like it, and...
Oh, no. There's more than that.
There's more than that. Okay. And then there's just the whole, a lot of this goes back to narrowbanding. That how can you possibly enjoy audio that's you know, squeezed through a narrowband receiver, you know, let alone transmitter sites, which are worth fixing and worth widebanding. But if all the you can't go fix all your listeners' receivers, so there's that. Okay, hey, we got to take a quick break. We're talking to David Bialik and Charles Kinney about AM radio, its demise, its future, anything to do to fix it. We will have predictions before the end of the show, and maybe some of our true colors will come out. I think it's going to be pretty interesting, so I encourage you to stay tuned. I'm Kirk Harnack, and this is This Week in Radio Tech. It's our episode number 648, and we're glad that you are here. We'll be right back with more information and maybe a little argumentation coming up right after this from Broadcast Bionics.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere and Skype TX for Radio brings high quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI, and incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
Thanks to Broadcast Bionics, sponsor of This Week in Radio Tech and the Bionic Studio. Check out all the cool stuff at bionics.co.uk or bionic.radio for Broadcast Bionics. Really appreciate their sponsorship and the cool things that they are doing for content creation, as Dave and David and Charles and I are discussing occasionally. We point that out. Content is really important. All right, we're talking to David Bialik and Charles Kinney about the future of AM radio and its demise. And Charles, you made a little allegation toward a soapbox needed about man-made noise. You know, it's gotten to the point for me, just about the only place I can listen to AM radio is in the car, on the road, away from the house. I probably have 47 wall warts here in the house, a number of computers, all kinds of things that I'm sure are generating noise. And, you know, it's my car out in the middle of a paved street where I get clear reception. What do you want to say about that?
I mean, this goes back to the FCC. The FCC is not enforcing their own rules. And so if you pull up to an LED traffic signal, the AM band is trashed.
Mm.
The reason that Tesla, in particular, and Ford was moving in the direction of getting rid of AM radio is not because it's cost too much to, you know, have an AM tuner. It has to do with engine noise. They don't want to suppress the noise. Okay, there's been ignition noise in cars forever that's been suppressed to allow AM radio to operate since time out of mind. But with the electric vehicles, it's a pain. And the FCC is not going to force these noise emitters, even though the rules clearly state that they have to resolve their problems. Everything emits noise in the AM band if you don't clean it up. It's just, it's inherently easy and not necessarily easy to fix it, but it's inherently easy to create noise in the AM band. And that all goes back to the FCC. They never, ever have said anything to anyone about trashing the AM band.
Yeah, I can't
You're
disagree
absolutely
with that at all.
Right.
Yeah.
I can tell you, last summer I was doing a project where they were driving me through Manhattan in Ubers every day for like 3 months, and I was amazed that there is no AM selection in those car radios at all, and that just surprised me. And what surprised me more is none of the Uber drivers even knew that there was no AM in there.
Well, and of course, you know, we're just talking about noise right now, but you have to go back back 20 years or so, when the FCC came up with the expanded band, because, of course, we interfere with ourselves. And the expanded band was really a pretty fantastic idea, except that they never followed through. So, okay, you've got a four-tower directional on 1340 or 1430, not 1340, but, you know, or whatever. And so, all right, we're going to move you up here to 1670, and you're going to get 10 kilowatts day, 1 kilowatt night, non-D, life will be great. And so everybody built that out, and then they said, oh, well, hey, we've still got this, so now we've got two radio stations. Why didn't the FCC say, no, the deal was you have to turn in your license on this crap directional, and we're going to clean out the band?
Or get some encouragement to build receivers that would receive it, because unfortunately at that point, back then, I think there were 75 years of legacy receivers out there.
For sure. I mean, it's, you know, that without a doubt is a challenge. But the FCC rolling over and saying, okay, well, you've got 1380 and 1670, and it's okay for you to sell 1380 to somebody else. And so now, instead of, you know, opening up the band, now you've crowded it even more.
Yeah. And what were the arguments for that? Weren't they something along the lines of, well, there's just still not enough listeners in the expanded band. We kind of need both. It would put us in a bad position if you made us turn that license in or turn that off.
And that might be valid if they said, you know, if they were actually doing that. But they literally were selling off the other license. So here it is. Now it's a profit center.
Yeah.
Hey, look what we did.
Yeah.
I mean, again, the FCC screws the AM operator. And, you know, we're...
FCC goofing off. We'll all remember this.
Okay. FCC what? Lays an egg.
There you go.
Remember that Radio World headline?
I don't remember it. Tell me what it was about.
That was the great marketplace decision.
Oh, you mean for AM stereo or something else?
AM stereo.
Okay.
Another way to improve the AM band.
Right. I mean, the fact of the matter is AM stereo was good.
AM stereo sounded phenomenal. Unfortunately, at first they chose, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Magnavox.
They chose Magnavox, and then Magnavox bowed out, so it went Harris, and then Harris bowed out, and it went Sequam. Yep. And Leonard
Don't forget
was,
Leonard Kahn.
Leonard was yeah. screaming. And
yeah, I'm sure.
The best way, Leonard had a great thing because not only was he trying to be backwards compatible, he said put two radios together and it'll work to the sidebands and you'll get the Kahn stereo system. And the big joke was put two Sequam radios next to one another, you had Kahn. But that was besides the point.
Well, on the plus side with AM stereo, I saw plenty of AM stations improve their plant. From the cart machines to the audio consoles to whatever their STL was. I was at a station, we had dual phone lines, and we ended up equalizing them ourselves because the telco couldn't seem to get their act together. Then we later on went to a 950 megahertz STL, dual Marty. So that was an improvement over what we were doing. And then we got Harris MW1 transmitter, modified the input so it didn't have an audio input transformer. And anyway, lots of stations got better, but then, I swear,
Kirk,
5 years later, 10 years later, I would sit down in somebody's car with him and say, "Oh, you've got AM stereo." What?
Kirk, you'd be surprised in the early 80s, when those stations went AM stereo, you had AM engineers caring about audio and quality much more than FMs at a time. Mm. Charles, you might disagree with me, but the AM people really cared and they had those stations sounding pristine and the station owners were really proud of the way the station sounded. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the numbers did not show it because guess what? There were no receivers and no education to the public.
And they weren't mandated. And that's because the FCC never said all radios going forward will have AM stereo, okay?
Yeah.
If the FCC treated AM stereo the same way that they treated FM stereo and HDTV, AM would still be, frankly, there would be people playing music.
And they would be going much larger distances than FM stations are.
Yep. But I think one thing that everybody's leaving out that happened at the same time as all of this was deregulation. And so all of a sudden you had everybody with a first-class license, especially, you know, if you were running a directional or you had the third-class license with Element 9. Anyway, you know, you had all these people that were qualified to maintain sites and know what's going on. Well, then deregulation came. All the engineers got fired. All of a sudden you got a contract guy doing 17 stations. And now your facility isn't being maintained. It's on the air. But it's not being maintained to the standards that, you know, it had been forever.
Well, I'll at least give a little counterpoint to that. And as I'm in a much smaller market, let's say I was in Richmond, Kentucky, or Western Kentucky, Northern Tennessee. My direct experience was that the guys who had the first class licenses were getting pretty old and they weren't interested in newer technology. Some of them didn't really understand stereo. I had a guy wire a whole studio and it was exactly 50-50 out of phase. This source might be out of phase because he didn't know what phase was. He had no idea. He had an FCC first class license. I'd never had a first class license. However, I kept up with the technology. I tried. I worked. And so whenever a station owner would allow me to, budget wise, time wise, it was the best sounding station around, or at least right in there with other good sounding stations. So I get the argument about a lack of talent, but I'm not always sure that the first class license indicated talent.
No. I don't. That your point is very well taken.
Okay.
And but my point is that when deregulation happened, and you no longer had to have these qualified people theoretically, and you went from having a full-time engineer on staff, and virtually every radio station had at least one person that knew what was going on.
It
was your chief operator. Yes.
Exactly. And you got rid of everybody. And so now all of a sudden, at the same time, the cellular industry is coming along. Mm. So all the talent from broadcast engineering in the 80s bailed and either became a contractor or went into the cellular industry. And now all of a sudden, oh my God, there's no engineering talent anymore. Well, no kidding. You know, you drove it away.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. That's a whole other topic unto itself. I got out of contract engineering when the Telecom Act passed in 96, figuring that my services would be less needed because several stations would consolidate. They would pick whoever was going to stay as engineers and other people might be let go. And that did happen for a while. Now I have a full-time job with Telos. I'm in demand. I say no to people all the time. It's interesting. It's interesting where we are. And then people who do want engineering work, some of them don't have money to pay. Their business model ain't so hot.
The ones that, and I'm sure you have the stations in your market too, Charles, that, they need the work. They hire you to come in and they said, we don't have the money after you do the work.
Yeah. No,
I've had quite a few of those.
To be fair, I've worked for Cox for basically 24 years, and they've treated me really well, so I don't really do much in the way of contract work. I'll help people out once in a while, but I'm not looking to make money off of it. But I've got people that do work for me, and they've been burned multiple times. Hmm. But the flip side of that is, the AM radio today, especially in smaller markets, you've got these little mom and pop guys and they're doing it all themselves. And that kind of comes back to the sites aren't being maintained. They're not being maintained because they don't have the money and they don't have the expertise. And, you kind of feel for these folks because they're doing the best they can.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the things about working at WSB in Atlanta is you're kind of the engineer for the state of Georgia because everybody calls you with questions.
Yeah,
it's kind of humorous, actually. And, I'll get these people that'll call me and I'm like, well, you need to call, an engineer. Well, yeah, but we can't really do that. And, can you just point us in the right direction? Okay. Well, the direction is calling an engineer.
Yeah.
But, it's sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kirk, I'm going to make a prediction.
Okay.
Just because I see what's going on with TV, I see what's going on in radio. And my prediction is this. In 10 years, we're not going to see over-the-air television because streaming and over-the-top are taking that by leaps and bounds. And I'd say right after that, AM is going to go, and after that, FM is going to go. Because guess what? FM does not offer anything, any advantage or any variety uniqueness. AM... The programming is not the engineering that's killing it. It's the content right now. And television, I also feel that the TV companies see the writing on the wall. I mean, look at what the acquisitions are going on and so forth. ABC went and bought, is investing more into their streaming platforms. They don't care. They don't want to stay. They're not increasing their eight stations, over-the-air stations. They're increasing their cable and streaming output because the cable companies are improving their streaming outputs. There are cable companies right now that are actually getting rid of their television services and only providing internet services and reselling the over-the-top services. So it's not just AM radio that we're seeing a demise, and people have to wake up and see that this is cyclical. Years ago, I was at a luncheon with Tom Keller, who was vice president of science and technology for NAB at the time, and Len Feldman, who was a legendary audio writer and we were talking, and I was the young kid in the room at the time, and both of them looked at me and said, "You watch, this is cyclical. Everything wired will become wireless, and everything wireless will then move over to wired. And that's what we're seeing. Okay, right now, the public doesn't even care about over-the-air broadcasts. If there was a way that we can get streaming infrastructure to hit 100% of the United States right now, over-the-air broadcasts would be gone already.
You know,
Go ahead, Carl. I'm sorry.
No. I want to hear your thought.
I have to disagree, at least in part, with what you're saying. Since I have a TV station upstairs that I don't take care of, but very smart people do. So right now, over the air actually is the fastest growing segment in television because there's too many cord cutters. And as ATSC3 takes off, hopefully, you know, essentially you're just sending a UDP stream. You can send all kinds of content and people can get it for free. You know, I think that there's a challenge there, you know, that will continue to make over-the-air survive. But additionally, nobody wants our spectrum. And so when you're at VHF, nobody's pushing to take our spectrum away. So it's going to continue to survive. It's free. And if anything has been shown, younger generations want things for free.
You're right to a point in my mind. You have ATSC3, which is basically a giant pipe, and it's an internet pipe. So you are delivering streaming directly out, and the television companies will, the television transmitters then can become a provider, and I think that has some merit. What Sinclair's been pushing with audio over ATSC3, I think it is really interesting because they have a way of sending out digital clean audio that can be appealing. And with companies that have good footprints, you could cover the entire United States very quickly.
Which the cellular people are not going to do.
No.
And that's the challenge. I mean, let's face it, cellular has been a viable thing since the 80s, okay? And you still can't drive down I-85 in Atlanta without dropping a call.
Interesting.
Okay? People are not going to pay for this streaming service when it's buffering. You know, they want to listen to the content.
Now, that's interesting. Now, everybody has different experiences. I have gotten on my phone in Nashville, Tennessee, and dropped once on a six-hour drive to Greenville, Mississippi on T-Mobile. And T-Mobile used to not be so good. And if you're watching something like YouTube, I've had it never drop out because it's, you know, buffering 10, 20, 30 seconds ahead.
And to be fair, yeah, so there is that. And generically, you know, but you're talking about freeways or interstates.
Yeah, exactly. If I went off, you know, okay. in the cotton patch, it wouldn't
off the road.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about off-roading. I'm talking about away from major arteries and away from major cities.
Yes, I agree with you because on the East Coast, cellular coverage is really good. You go to the Midwest, it's awful.
Oh, you know, I was just in El Paso and the cell coverage that I had available to me was really bad.
The problem is it's really good. It just translates everything to Spanish.
Hey, now. Hey, I am interested in, I don't know if we have time for it in this show, but, you know, where does ATSC3 and Sinclair and the, I forget the name of the other company that wants to put, you know,
Pearl.
A bunch of.
Pearl is the company that it's the consortium of. Okay.
But
Sinclair and Cox and ABC, they, all the O&Os.
But isn't conditional access part of their business plan such that there may be some free services, but there may be plenty of paid services? And how's that really different from streaming over cellular?
Well, the difference is that you're not paying, theoretically, you know, you can have a receiver.
Yeah.
So you're not paying for the pipe. And
so in that regard, it's like Sirius XM. You know, the
With a much better codec, for sure.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're stuck back there. Hey, guys.
And you can be out in the woods to listen to it.
We are talking about AM. David Bialik is here. Charles Kenny is here. And we got to take a quick break and hear from some of our sponsors so that the money does keep flowing. And our show is brought to you in part by Angry Audio. And this is their USB analog audio gizmo. What is it? Well, it's really well built. It's kind of heavy because it's in a steel case. Ain't no aluminum here, buddy. That's a real steel case. And what it is, well, I'll tell you what, I got a web page up about this. Let me go ahead and bring that up while I'm still trying to talk about it. Here we go. And if I can just add that and make it full screen. There we go. This is the USB audio gizmo from Angry Audio. And look at this, the phrase, stop the whining. Well, that's true. Why is it true? Well, it's because the USB audio gizmo from Angry Audio was designed very carefully with regard to the grounds and the ground planes and separation of ground. Ground from your computer is separate from your analog ground that goes to your broadcast gear. And that means you don't get any kind of ground loop. You don't get the whining that you can get with other USB audio interface devices. This thing is just so good. And also, you may notice, hey, where's the volume controls on it? It doesn't have any. It's meant for professional use. It's expecting a professional level coming in, and it gives you a professional level going back out. If you need different levels, you take care of that in the analog domain. But if you need an interface that goes from your computer, PC, anything with a USB interface, you can get very clean audio in and out using the USB analog audio gizmo. I love this thing. Let me see if I can get my picture back up here. When you buy a USB analog audio gizmo, you get with it the USB cable that goes to your computer, so that's convenient. You also get something you're going to need, and that is these interface cables that are the Studio Hub Plus standard, okay? And they have XLR, male and female, for the input and output. This thing is so clean, clean as a whistle. You will get fantastic audio performance from it when connected to a PC. So thanks a lot to Angry Audio. Go to the website, angryaudio.com. Check out this and all the other things that they have on the site that'll make your station sound better. Make it sound as good as David and Charles are talking about here. Hey, our show is also brought to you in part by Max Connect Wireless. And here's John Tocock to tell you how they use these cellular modems at their facility.
With all of the recent cybersecurity attacks against large corporations, we were looking for a product that would give us the ultimate security at our transmitter sites and as well as with our broadcast equipment. Max Connect fits the bill very well. Its greatest security feature is the fact that it gives you a single static IP address. Using this single static IP address allows us to close hundreds of open ports on our firewalls across the company and restrict access to only the Max Connect IPs. This has greatly reduced our exposure to the World Wide Web and made us much more secure moving forward. It's also given us the ability to expand as needed in a secure fashion.
Website maxconnect.com. There you go, maxconnect.com. What do they do now? By the way, Josh Bone wanted me to tell you that he appreciates all the confidence and business that you've been giving to him and the Max Connect group, and they do all kinds of things now. They do on-site work. They'll build a new facility, they'll rebuild a facility, they'll fix your old facility, and so they're really a full-service company. They'll travel anywhere in the U.S., although they do have offices in Alabama, Maryland, Ohio, South Carolina, and Texas. Also, they do repairs. They do repairs on lots of things. And if they don't repair something that you want to have repaired, they'll tell you where to go. A lot of times that's our friend Mike Patton. So check out Max Connect. I know it's spelled funny. MaxConnect, MaxConnect.com. Thanks a lot to Josh Bone for getting this all figured out and getting good quality, reliable data to transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. All right, it's This Week in Radio Tech, and I'm here with Charles Kinney and David Bialik, and we're talking about AM radio and its demise and improvement or replacement or whatever.
Mentioned HD earlier with WSB in particular, and the challenge that we had was that we had a general manager with a Jeep. And Daimler Chrysler at the time was one of the last manufacturers that was still building 10 kilohertz broadband radios for AM.
Uh-huh.
And that was back to AM stereo. And so when we turned on the HD on 750, they could hear the sidebands, which was a big problem there. But the biggest problem we had with HD AM was 760 WJR in Detroit through no fault of their own. But of course, the Skywaves would enter, and they had turned on HD. And during the early morning hours, they would interfere. And frankly, on the north side of Atlanta, clobber WSB. So that was a big challenge, which we worked with Ubiquiti and, you know, the many incantations of the HD radio folks since then. But it's a real challenge. And this kind of comes back to trying to clear out the band, which would help and be an improvement.
Wouldn't it be nice if suddenly every station that was under 10 kilowatts just went away?
Well, certainly the you know, class fours of the world, you know, if you got rid of all the 1230s and 1340s, and, you know, I mean, there's so many of those that just every town has one and they stomp all over each other.
Yeah. You know, back when Ford said we're taking AM radios out of not only our EV cars, but some other cars as well, it occurred to me, and I made this argument here on the show, you know, it's we're in a political environment now where a great number of Spanish language stations, African-American related stations, religious stations that may be Catholic based, maybe Baptist based, maybe in large cities, East and West Coast, you know, some Eastern religion based. In other words, you've got communities of people with AM radio stations who are what are considered marginalized communities. And so to take away, you know, for Ford to say, no, we're taking away AM radios. I mean, if I were in the broadcast, if I were a broadcast politician, if I were there trying to lobby, I would go after that angle, saying you're really disproportionately hurting. I mean, here in Nashville, I counted up, there's something like, I forget if it's 8 or 11 Spanish language radio stations right here in Nashville, Tennessee. I think 8 of them were on the AM dial here in Nashville.
Sure. Yeah, but Kirk, what the great mistake that Ford made, and it's to our advantage, they announced that they had the power to turn it off with flick of the switch at their end, and so they can literally kill an industry because this is what they're saying. Hey, we're just not going to offer this anymore. Are they paying a right for any royalty for AM? No. Are they getting money from any AM to carry AM? No. Are they getting money to carry Sirius XM? Yes.
Yes.
And here is what they're saying. Hey, NAB or Xperia or whoever, if you want your stations being in our cars, you know, show us the money. That's what they're really saying. And they made the mistake of showing how easy it was to control it. So now Congress can say, oh, no, you know, you're not doing a line of code and turning putting an industry out. And that's exactly the mistake that they made on their side. And I'm sure whoever wrote that speech for the chairman to say got hell for that.
Because if they can turn it off and turn it back on with firmware, whether it's remotely or in the dealership or whichever it may end up being, if they can do if they have it on, but they haven't solved their own interference whine problem from EV motors or whatever it may be causing it in a car.
They know how to fix it.
That costs money. Flipping the switch on and off cost them no money. But
right. But the thing is, it's a solvable problem, and that's what they were saying. They were on the ground saying, "Oh, we're getting rid of it because it's a non-solvable problem." Guess what? It's a solvable problem, and if it costs them a quarter to in chips or whatever to fix it, they can fix it. But they don't want to because they're not making money for fixing the problem.
Well, and you know, one of the other challenges that actually is causing them grief right now, not just Ford but auto manufacturers in general, is they can't get the chips for HD radio. And so now there are cars that previously had HD radio rolling off the lines that no longer do.
Is that right? I didn't know they couldn't get HD radio. Was there a factory burn down like everything else? Or
Well, no, it's just the same chip backup that every, you know, I mean, you can't get chips to run washing machines. Lord knows where you're going to get the chips for AC radio. And there are absolutely manufacturers that are no longer offering AC radio because of that. It's not that they're not going to offer it again, as far as I know. But there's a challenge with that.
And I can say something else. I was in the dealership the other day. I bought a new car, and I'm enjoying it. I'm listening to a bunch of people. There were a bunch of people in there asking the dealership, how do I turn off this HD radio? Because the radio keeps going into buffering. And I thought it was very interesting that, number one, it's actually very simple to turn off your HD. And the buffering is really annoying. I live around 40 miles outside of Manhattan, so I can drive, and yeah, I get some dead zones. And when you're in HD, it's bad.
Well, wait a minute. Doesn't your radio flip back to FM?
Right.
But if you go, it goes into blend, it'll go into buffering, and suddenly.
Tell me what you mean by going to buffering. What does that mean? That doesn't have a meaning for me with HD radio. That shouldn't.
It happens.
What do you mean by that?
Okay, you're driving, and suddenly the radio doesn't do anything, and I'm saying, okay, this must be it's buffering and so forth.
So it doesn't flip back to analog?
Not at those points, because it's at certain points where I guess it's just really flaky because I see the HD light going on and off, on and off, on and off.
Okay, well, that seems like bad implementation on the receiver manufacturer's part.
Oh, it probably is.
What brand of car?
It's a Mazda.
Lord knows the Japanese know how to make radios.
Yes, but I turned it off, and so the audio is fine.
Well, remember, a piston engine goes boing, 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 but a Mazda goes buffer,
zoom,
buffer,
zoom.
Buffer. Hey, showing my age. No, but I mean, I've had aftermarket HD radios in my car. I have never experienced anything I would ever call buffering.
It's
HD or it's analog, and as long as the station is aligned,
in sync,
it's fine. If it's not aligned, it's terrible. But that's not the radio's fault.
I was driving down I-95 going south. I heard it, and I said, okay, if I turn off the HD, okay, the signal comes back, and it's fine.
Well,
that's really strange. Yeah, I'd love to explore that, because there is no buffering in the HD radio. It's there or it's not, and if the HD is not there, or at least at a viable threshold, then it just rolls back over to the analog. And to be fair, all of a sudden you go from quiet digital to blend analog, it's noticeable.
Yeah, maybe it's the blend I'm hearing, but it is awful. I was able to turn it off, and it was much better.
Yeah, well, that's a horrible implementation. That should not be happening.
That sounds like something you should address with Jeff Detweiler at Xperi, who is definitely an expert.
Oh, yeah, and I can.
And a good guy.
I speak to Jeff all the time, and I happen to like some of the implementation. I'm just not a fan of it, and maybe it's just also I didn't care because I'm driving a convertible and I don't need the clean sound.
I got it. We got to have one more break, but before we do that, I want to ask you about this headline from Radio Online. Cumulus Media says over 82 million Americans listen to AM radio monthly. Okay. You know, a lot of people, we're so used to weekly stats. This does say monthly. Really? Are there that many listening to what does that mean? Listening? I'm surprised that Cumulus is able to find the number that high.
Well,
I'd like to see that better defined, really.
Well, I get it. And I would like to see that better defined as well. But the fact of the matter is that, I mean, look at WLW in Cincinnati. Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic radio station, well programmed, local content, number one.
Same thing with WABC in New York.
Yeah. Absolutely. Another huge success story, KMOX in St. Louis.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can go on and on. And it's ironic that Cumulus is part of that story because
they failed at each owning those stations.
Well, and they definitely, the biggest failure that they had was in San Francisco, where you had KGO and KSFO, which were perennially market leaders in a market where AM radio was built to succeed because the terrain is so horrible for FM. There's definitely, you know, look at KFI in LA, still a market dominator on AM. If you provide content that people want to listen to, they will tune to your radio station.
Which goes back to what I was saying originally, Kirk. The engineering is one thing. It's the content. If you put good content up there, people will find it and people will listen.
So would I be out of line by saying that a lot of AM's problems are caused by the FCC trying to appease too many people, too many groups, too many people want a radio station in, well, prior to the 80-90 docket, we got more and more AM stations.
Well, the 80-90 docket ruined the FM band.
Yeah. I tell you, I just found this article in the New York Times, and I have found the problem, folks. Here it is. In a future filled with electric cars, AM radio may be left behind. Okay, that's a little tease of a headline. But if you scroll down to the picture of this woman trying to tune the radio in her car, you can't, with 2-inch purple fingernails, you can't tune an AM radio.
Well, to be fair, in 1960, she couldn't tune an AM radio either.
But I think we're going back to what I originally said, that education of the radio station staff is very important because they don't understand what AM is and how to market it. And people don't understand what an AM radio is. I mean, it's funny. I was outside the other day and I was talking with some people here, and they said, oh, yeah, remember we used to listen to Dan Ingram on WABC. There's no stations like that anymore.
There's no Dan Ingram anymore either.
There's no Dan Ingram. But I said, yeah, but Cousin Bruce is around. They go, he is? I said, oh, yeah, you can listen to him on Saturday nights on WABC. And they said, WABC is still around? People don't know that.
Wow.
Well, but WABC drove them away for so long. You can't expect people to know, oh, they're doing music on Saturday night.
No, and I give John Katsimatidis so much credit for rebuilding a station.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's amazing that station now is, I think, in the latest book, I think it's number 10 in New York.
Huh. If not higher, it's unbelievable how well.
And I also think it's number 10 because it's unique. It's not the same thing on every other station.
It's a great sounding radio station. WGN in Chicago. See,
absolutely,
yes. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Great station
up at the top of the ratings. And AM's not dead.
AM's being molested.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
True. Hey, guys, we're gonna take last break. We're gonna hear from some friends with Vox Pro and Broadcast General Store. When we come back, we're gonna have just a minute for a final word. So work on your final thought, whatever it may be. If you want to drive some nails in the coffin, or if you want to give it some more resuscitation, whatever you want, that's coming up. Our show let me flip my camera here. Hey, our show this week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Vox Pro from Broadcast General Store. We'll be right back.
Hey, what's happening? St. John here, coming to you from Command Central, and wanted to tell you about the absolute best partner you can have in radio. I'm talking about, boom, Wheatstone's Vox Pro. Lots of different audio software out there. Why Vox Pro? It's the only software designed to do what we needed to do, which is record, edit, playback in real time. When I say lightning fast, I'm going to show you how fast you can edit stuff up in Vox Pro right now. Literally 3 clicks on the controller, mark left, mark right, everything that gets marked, you hit delete, it goes away. It's literally that fast. So we're going to take this part right here. Boom. From caller 9 to him saying, I'm ready.
Five. Ready for that secret sound.
Boom. All of that stuff. Hit delete. It goes away. Here's your edit.
You are tackling secret sound, caller 9.
I'm ready, St. John.
So one of the best features of version 7, this is awesome. It's effects macros, and you can literally put a chain of effects together so that instead of having to normalize a phone bit and then use noise reduction on it and EQ it and all that, you can literally build a chain. One button, this button, this one's called call right here. I just click that. All of those processes happen instantaneously. Final thing that I love about Vox Pro, and there's so much more to get into, but one of my favorite things, you can load it on a laptop. I've literally done my show from a hotel room in Armenia to the conference room at, this was fun, jury duty. Great thing, no one could tell the difference. Vox Pro makes it totally easy. Telling you, if you're looking for the best on-air partner, call my friends at Wheatstone, ask them about Vox Pro, and you will be glad you did.
Vox Pro, you need to go to Broadcasters General Store at bgs.cc. Check them out. Their phone number is 352-622-7700. Broadcasters General Store. Man, these are some good, good people. Love them. Been doing business with them for years at BGS. They have what I would call sharp pencils. They'll make you a good deal, I promise you. BGS.cc, Broadcasters General Store. All right. We are here with David Bialik and Charles Kenny. Gentlemen, I'm sorry, we've just got a minute. David, why don't we go to you first? You're in the middle of my screen. Got a final thought on AM radio.
AM needs, there needs to be some education to the stations for the staff to know what they're selling. There needs to be education to the programmers to know what they can deliver. And I'll say this to the AM broadcasters, to the FM broadcasters, uniqueness in content will win. And the engineers have always met the challenge, but the programmers need to be unique.
And a good example that you gave of that would be WABC, and it's kind of rebirth in New York City. I got to visit there a few months ago, met Curtis Sliwa, who always runs for mayor, right, in New York City. Met Judge Jeanine for like half a second. Rita Cosby, she was the first female anchor on Fox News many years ago. They say you shouldn't meet your heroes. Always thought a lot of Rita. She met me. She met my wife. She immediately started talking Spanish to my wife. I didn't know Rita could speak Spanish, and she goes. So, but yeah,
and they were talking about you, Kirk.
That, well, who knows? I don't know. Maybe not. All right, David. Thank you, Charles Kinney. You got a final thought on AM radio?
So, first of all, I agree with what David said, but I think more to the point, AM radio needs a champion, and you know, NAB, I hope you're listening. That is your job, and you really need to step up digital. If they can ever get a standard and get auto manufacturers to buy it, analog AM radio needs to go away. And digital AM radio could revitalize the entire band. And I think that is potentially the future if we want to save AM radio. AM radio is not the future.
And what would you say to the very first argument people make is, well, then you obsolete the millions of AM radios ever produced that are not digital.
Well, to be fair, every year we obsolete millions of people who are listening to those AM radios to expiration.
So we did that to NTSC television.
Correct.
We did.
And we did it successfully.
But the FCC was behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
The FCC has shown, or not shown, that they're ready to be behind digital AM radio.
Interesting. Good points. Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you very much. I wish we had more time, but we don't. And I'm so glad I got both of you on the show. I mean, two really good experts, people passionate about radio, and both of you passionate about AM radio. So thank you for correcting my thinking on a couple things and bringing all these points to the audience. I really appreciate it. David Bialik from New York, the New York City area. Thank you. And Charles Kenny from the Atlanta area, thank you very much. You can go back to your Coca-Cola there, Charles.
Thanks so much for having me.
Don't drink the other one. All right. It's This Week in Radio Tech. I want to thank Suncast for producing our show, as usual. He does a lot of the graphics, even on shows that I do a bad job of camera work on. And also, Chris Tarr should be back with us next week. We sure hope so. And we will see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.